Live from CAF Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. Mondays can feel a little sluggish, especially after a holiday. While some of us may have hit the pause button on news and current events, political momentum is picking up. This week, Governor Newsom will be taking on Florida Governor Ron DeSantis in a debate moderated by Fox News' Sean Hannity. In the state legislature, the assembly has new positions in leadership, and the makeup of California's political weight in Congress, it's changing following the retirement of another longtime Congress member. Not to mention, the race for the Senate is gaining steam. There is a good amount to keep track of. Laura Cordy is co-author of Politico's California Playbook and joins us to get us up to speed on what's going on politically in the state and its impact on the national political landscape. Good morning, Laura.
Good morning, Vicky.
Did you have a good Thanksgiving?
Oh, I had a great one. How about you?
I did too. Very full. Still full from Thursday.
Right. It's going to take a while to get through that.
Yeah. So we're going to dive into the changes in state leadership as well as a changing of the guard in congressional power in just a moment. But once again, Governor Newsom is going to take the national spotlight on Fox News. This time he's going to be debating Florida Governor Ron DeSantis in Georgia. As we know, both governors, it is known that they can take jabs at each other. They don't see eye
right.
on many issues. But what stands out to you about the format of having a debate?
Right. Well, this is a bit, you know, I think that Newsom's team has characterized this as a two against one kind of debate. It's moderated by Sean Hannity, the Fox News anchor, and obviously Ron DeSantis is conservative. And so there's certainly something to be said here about Newsom going into the lion's den. My colleague Christopher Catalago talked with Sean Hannity for a while. There's a new piece out from him today about what Hannity said to him. And, you know, Sean Hannity wants to come off as somebody who's very, equal. He wants to give equal treatment to both Ron DeSantis and Gavin Newsom. That's his kind of pledge. But it's going to be a little bit unusual. It's set in Alpharetta, Georgia. There's going to be no audience. And I think that this is a chance both for Ron DeSantis and Gavin Newsom to kind of play to their bases and jab at, as you alluded to, kind of reliable foils. They have a lot of, aside from their actual policy stances, they have a lot in common. They're both kind of these fledgling national figures. They're both trying to raise their profiles. They both have really strong stances on things like crime, LGBTQ issues, homelessness. And this is a chance to contrast themselves with, you know, somebody of the opposite party. So there's benefits for both, certainly.
Are there benefits for maybe California or even the Democratic Party outside of the individual potential political aspirations of Governor Newsom beyond being governor?
Yeah, you know, I don't know if there's a huge benefit to Californians directly other than maybe seeing, you know, their leader kind of, make Democrats proud, as it were. But, you know, Gavin Newsom's team has said that he intends to talk up President Joe Biden's record. This is not new. Newsom has been a surrogate for Biden on the campaign trail for a while. I think Newsom and some others in the Democratic Party very much see him as kind of injecting some new lifeblood into the party. At the same time, we're hearing complaints about Biden's age and about the relative age of the Democratic Party in general. There's a real, I think, hunger from some folks, especially younger voters, for somebody who's willing to stand up and take jabs and really get on the offensive, as it were, when it comes to the narrative. Gavin Newsom says this all the time, that Republicans are winning on the narrative. And so, I think there's a chance here for the Democratic Party to feel like they're punching back a little bit.
Yeah, and this also comes as the Democratic Party, I mean, they're also facing their share of internal challenges going into the holiday week at the California Democratic Convention in Sacramento. There were protests over the Israel-Hamas war. What stands out to you about the odds that are taking place within the party?
Right. I mean, this is one of the big dividing lines that's happening right now. As you mentioned, there were protests at the California Democratic Convention the other weekend. And where it has really shown up, I think, has been in the Senate race in California. You have Adam Schiff and Katie Porter and Barbara Lee, who have all been trying to define themselves over the past year as they're jockeying for, you know, the late Senator Dianne Feinstein's seat. And this has become one of the brighter lines between them. Barbara Lee has really worked to single herself out as somebody who is, you know, calling for a ceasefire, somebody who is not quite as, stalwartly pro-Israel as the other candidates. And so she's trying to align herself more with progressives and tell voters that she is the progressive choice on this issue at a time when there is so much dissent happening.
Yeah, what was also interesting is that convention could have ended up with an official party endorsement for a candidate for Senate, but that didn't happen. Why?
Right. Yeah. So the way that you can endorsements work at the convention is that you have to get 60% or more in order to win the official party endorsement. And so you had all three Senate candidates jockeying for that title. But nobody came up with 60%. Barbara Lee did get the most. She got a plurality of the votes. And her team really views that as a big win. There were lots of folks at the convention rallying for her. She got a huge round of applause when her name was said at convention. But the question is whether that plurality of endorsement votes is enough to really kickstart her campaign, which, as you know, she's been falling behind in the polls, you know, hanging around single digits, far behind Katie Porter and Adam Schiff for months now. Mm. So, there is a hope from her team that there's, you know, a new lifeblood that can be injected with this plurality of votes. But it remains to be seen.
It's also interesting that all three are Congress members. And so that could actually change the makeup of California's political weight in Congress, given all three are putting their names in the hat to run for Senate. I mean, that also follows some retirements of also longtime congressional leaders who are Californians. Right. I mean, what does this tell you about how California may be impacted with the national political weight in Congress?
Right. Yeah. You know, it's so interesting. You think about the last couple of years. We had, of course, Kevin McCarthy recently as Speaker of the House. And prior to that, you know, Nancy Pelosi was a longtime heavyweight in Congress. And she still very much is, but obviously has taken a backseat to some of the leadership duties as she's, you know, continued on with her career. There's certainly a feeling that there's a bit of a changing of the guard in California's congressional delegation. You have a big wave of people that came through in the 90s and the early 2000s who are starting to retire. We saw that with Anna Eshoo recently, and before that, Tony Cardenas. And you have a number of folks who are simply deciding not to run for another term. In addition to these three members of Congress, you know, Katie Porter, Adam Schiff, and Barbara Lee, who are in, you know, pretty high profile districts, you know, for Adam Schiff and Barbara Lee, solidly blue districts, for Katie Porter, a purple district. And so you have these kind of open seats, a big swath of open seats for the first time in a while. And while it's unlikely to necessarily change the makeup of Congress itself, it certainly means a new generation of people for California.
Hmm. Has former Speaker Nancy Pelosi said, as it stands now, she's running, right, for re-election?
Yeah, she's running for re-election. We don't know when she's going to decide to retire. There's so many implications that come with her retirement, not the least of which is just her fundraising power. She is a huge boon for Democrats, especially this year when Democrats are trying to win back power in the House. But also her retirement would mean opening up this very competitive Democratic seat in San Francisco. There's a number of ambitious young Democrats who are really looking to get into that race. You know, some of the names we've heard as possibilities is State Senator Scott Wiener, who has really defined himself in Sacramento. Her daughter, Christine Pelosi, could be a contender. Whenever she does decide to step down, that's going to be a whole nother race. It's going to be a whole nother beast. So people are really interested to see when she decides to retire.
And I know that this is a couple years away, but there's already names in the gubernatorial race to replace Governor Newsom when he terms out. What stands out to you about who is announcing their candidacy so far? Even, you know, some others who are rumored to potentially announce it in the coming weeks or months.
Right. So the first announcement we got was Lieutenant Governor Eleni Kounalakis, who, you know, came out way ahead of the pack. And Eleni Kounalakis has significant statewide name ID. She also has a lot of money, which when it comes to these kind of races, you know, can't be understated. It's hard to win a statewide in general, but especially in California with 40 million voters and a lot of ground to cover, you really have to have a good war chest. What's interesting to me is that she entered the race, but she didn't clear the field. Shortly after, we heard some rumblings from Attorney General Rob Bonta that he might like to enter the race. He hasn't officially launched yet. Superintendent of Public Instruction Tony Thurmond has launched a race for governor. We're hearing that maybe Senate Pro Tem Tony Atkins might want to run as well. And so I think what's notable about that is you do have this kind of front runner, Eleni Kounoulakis, who has a lot of money and a lot of name ID, but people aren't necessarily intimidated out of running against her. So I think it's going to be really interesting. You have a lot of ambitious Democrats looking to succeed Gavin Newsom and no real clear successor yet. So that's going to be a very interesting race when it gets underway.
You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. And if you're just joining us, we're talking with Laura Cordy, co-author of Politico's California Playbook, about the latest in the political world. So there's also a change in leadership when it comes to the state legislature. I was reading this morning's California Playbook, which you co-authored, and you were talking about the new committee chair appointments in the state assembly by Speaker Robert Rivas. This also is going to be Speaker Rivas's really first full session governing this body.
Right.
What did his selections say to you about how he will lead?
Right. Well, we knew that Robert Rivas had a lot of mouths to feed when it comes to these committee appointments. I'm sure folks remember that last year earlier this year, you know, he ran this campaign to unseat Anthony Rendon. There was a lot of animosity in that kind of campaign. There were some dividing lines, some resentments held. And so the fact that there were folks who were on Robert Rivas's side meant that he had, you know, a lot of folks to reward. And so with these committee appointments, he certainly did that, appointing some of his top allies to the big committee chairmanships. You have Jesse Gabriel, who is going to be head of the budget committee. That's a huge appointment. You have Buffy Wicks, the Bay Area lawmaker, who is head of appropriations. One notable thing when it comes to these changes is that he demoted one of his top allies, Los Angeles lawmaker Isaac Bryan. He was majority floor leader and is now head of the Natural Resources Committee. That is significant because it says something about, you know, Robert Rivas willing to kind of make tough choices when he feels like it necessitates it. In this case, this was a close friend and a close ally that he felt, you know, no longer served that position. And that's tough. I think that that shows a bit of a willingness to be, you know, slightly unpopular, to make some tough choices. But we have yet to hear exactly how much power he's willing to give committee chairs, and that's really key. As it stands, committee chairs can decide what bills live and die, and that's caused some problems over the past year, with the wider caucus being upset that, you know, one person is the gatekeeper for legislation that the rest of them like. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, if there's autonomy given to these leaders or if they're, you know, expected to fall in line behind Rivas. Mm.
And also Assemblymember Kevin McCarty, who's also running for mayor in the city of Sacramento, he received an appointment as well.
Right. Kevin McCarty is going to be head of the Public Safety Committee while he's running for Sacramento mayor. And I was very interested to see who would get that committee, just because over the last year, it has been such a source of, I want to say, headaches and contention for Democrats. You know, they've had some contentious legislation around fentanyl and public safety and human trafficking go through that committee. And it's really caused some problems for Democrats who are a little bit more moderate, feeling like they have to answer for the progressive stances of some of their colleagues. And so Kevin McCarty is going to have to preside over some really tough and really emotional battles, too. And, you know, I'm really interested to see what he does with that committee.
There was also the announcement going into the holiday that the chair of the California Democratic Party, Rusty Hicks, is going to be running for a state assembly seat in District 2. That's the North Coast. So it spans like Sonoma County all the way up to Eureka. What stands out to you about this move, moving from potentially the chair of the Democratic Party to state leadership?
Yeah, you know, I was just talking to somebody about this. Rusty Hicks has been around for a long time, and as you mentioned, chair of the Democratic Party. I don't believe he's ever been elected to a formal position, so I think there's certainly a difference between leading the kind of tone and tenor of the party versus actually enacting policy. He is going to be running for the seat, I believe the region currently held by Assemblymember Jim Wood, who announced he is not going to run for re-election. But what that does is set off, you know, some jockeying for leader of the California Democratic Party, which, you know, party leadership is always a big deal, but especially in California, where Democrats just dominate and tend to have such a presence on the national stage, that's an incredibly important position. And, you know, when that election comes up, it's certainly going to be a tense one. Mm.
In the last like 20 seconds or so that we have, you know, in the final weeks of 2023, anything else that you're going to be closely following that we missed?
Oh, I'm just, you know, eager to see what Gavin Newsom does with Ron DeSantis. I'm also eager to see, you know, December 8th is the filing deadline for re-election. And so you might see some people drop out. You might see some people get in. There's still time.
Laura Cordy, thank you so much.
Thanks, Vicky.
Laura is the co-author of Politico's California Playbook, getting us up to speed on all the latest happenings in the political world. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, CAP Radio. I'm Vicky Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.